So, the I-5 killer, what do we know about him, Rita?
Oh, Randall Woodfield, like to be called Randy. He was born in 1950. His killing spree went from October of 79 to February of 81.
Okay, so not even 2 years.
Yeah, not long at all. And he grew up in a very good home. His dad was, manager at a phone company. His mom was stay-at-home mom. He had two sisters. By all accounts, his childhood, it was very, I mean, he was very, like, normal. But then when his teenage years started exhibiting, like, really strange behavior and started, like, exposing himself to
Yeah, I mean that, yeah, that was kind of like, I mean, I guess a red flag, you know? I mean, I know
Oh,
he,
it's a big red flag.
yeah, so I know, like I've read about, murderers doing that before. I mean, but yeah, that's, yeah, that's just, I mean, he had a lot of instances of this, correct? I mean, throughout his
Oh yeah.
teenage years, yeah.
When he went into high school, he played football at Newport High School for the Vikings. He was a wide receiver. Apparently, he was very good. He also ran track. And get this, he was part of a group called the Campus Crusade for Christ.
Oh dear.
And later on, who went to high school with him said they thought that he did it just as kind of a
Cover.
cover up
Yeah.
type, So, whew, yeah.
Right, because I mean, where did he grow up?
In Oregon,
Okay.
state
Like,
of
what was
Oregon.
it? Was it like the city or the country or like?
Yeah, well, it's a town in Salem called Otter Rock. So,
Yeah, I feel like, like especially back then, there was this assumption that like just because somebody was religious, they were good automatically, right? So I
Well,
mean
it's
that's,
still like that.
yeah, well yeah, that's true. I mean I think it was more prevalent then, but I could be wrong. Yeah, he was, so I could totally see that, being kind of a cover story, if you're, showing yourself to people the rest of your
It
time.
was, Well, okay, so he ended up getting drafted, by the NFL. The thing is when he was in high school and he was doing, exhibiting all this behavior, the coaches covered it up and got his record, his arrest record, expunged so that their star player,
Pays to be
would
popular,
take
I guess.
something, right? He did, however, have to go to therapy, which, yeah, obviously worked.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, maybe that was where he learned to take it to the next level. That's probably a bad joke,
Well,
but
sometimes people do that, and they just tell them what they want to hear, like therapist, Like, no, I didn't. And I don't know if it was a male therapist. It could have been. And he looked at completely different, with that, in the NFL, and the cop, I mean, not the cops, the coaches were like, he was so nice and so polite and so quiet. I couldn't even imagine this guy doing this. And I'm thinking, well, you're not a woman. So it's a whole different thing. So maybe if the therapist was a man, it would come off completely different.
The whole boys will be boys thing, right? It's, yeah.
And again, just my theory, I don't know.
Right.
Just like, right? So he started like, women in 1974 with the Packers didn't even get to play, got caught doing his exposure stuff, right? Broke into an ex-girlfriend's house and just ramsacked it,
Oh my
tore
gosh.
it all up, right? And so he had all these arrests, and they were like, you're out,
Yeah.
and so they got rid of him. He went on to play semi-pro for the Manitowoc Chiefs, and same thing happened. he started doing the same stuff and kicked out of there. So he moved back to Oregon, and this is where his spree started, his killing spree, right? So he was doing everything from robberies to kidnapping to torture to raping to killing. He just,
Right, so it kept on escalating, right?
yeah. And even a cop said, he goes, like, here, this Jim Lawrence, who was part of the Portland police, he had said he killed, and then 5 weeks later he killed, and then it was 2 weeks later, and then it was a week later, and so it just kept getting more,
Yeah.
right? Yeah, right.
And then
So,
what was his, did he have like a, I don't know, like a particular method that he preferred as far as killing goes?
there was actually two.
Okay.
When he first started out, he started doing like the robberies and sexual assaults on women, but he didn't kill them, right? He hadn't escalated to the killing yet, but he would take them at knife point and
Yeah.
then force them to give him oral sex.
Jeez. Yikes.
Yeah, I think I'd have
Yeah.
been like, go ahead and
Yeah,
yeah.
that's, I mean, yeah, just
Yeah,
oof.
right. Bah. So between 1980 and 1981 is when he started, or his killing, his murdering, and where it escalated to all that. His very what they know of his first victim, which blows my mind. He went back to his 10-year high school reunion, met a girl, I mean, a friend that he'd known since grade school named Sherry Ayers, took her to her apartment, raped her, strangled her, stabbed her, killed her.
Jeez.
And
Yeah.
what?
Yeah, it's, man, it's like almost like, gosh, it almost seems like too contrived to be real in a way. Like it's like it reminded me for some reason of Once Upon a Time in America, the Sergio Leone film. Like the scene shows that Robert De Niro has totally like kind of given over to the dark side. Is like he meets his like his childhood friend slash first love or whatever, and
Right.
just forces himself on her, and like even though they'd been friends for all these years, and it was just like this brutal scene. So yeah, for some reason that just reminded me of that, I guess because it seems so like, I don't know, from a storytelling perspective, like it just
Goes to
seems so like,
show, you don't really know people, right?
yeah, you really don't.
I mean, especially since childhood, he had known her, you know? You're like, wow. I just.
Do you think maybe this, I'm not sure how to word this, but like, do you think like because he knew her, he felt safe trying it out on her?
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be because of a familiar environment. He's in his
Yeah.
hometown. He knows the place, you know? So, yeah, and she trusted him.
Yeah, and
So maybe.
yeah,
He didn't have to kidnap her or anything. He was
and if
like,
he,
look.
if he didn't succeed, he could have even just been like, oh, I was drunk, or I'm really sorry,
Exactly,
and
yeah.
maybe
So.
because they're friends, she would be like, all right, not tell anybody, especially
Right.
back then,
Exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. So that was in December of 1980, right? And then he went on and he started committing like more robberies, sexual assaults, and murders. He was arrested in 1981 and convicted in June for the murder of Sherry Hall, who was one of the workers in the building that he broke into in Portland. And
Okay.
that's where there was two of them. And like I said, one, this says the other girl was Beth Wilmot, but Oxygen gave me a different name, so I'm not sure
Right.
if the Wilmot's the right name. But Hall died, the other girl survived. And what he did to them was he assaulted them, sexually assaulted them, and shot them both in the back of the head. He would eventually end up getting 90 years in prison for that one. And it, out of all his murders, which I will tell you about, it's the only one he was convicted for.
Right, I saw that. He was only convicted for one, but they believe maybe something like 44.
And see, here's the thing, is I'm, because they haven't been able to connect him directly, right, to that many, and so it's, that's where the maybe Kimby comes in,
Okay, so that's a good segue. There's
right, yeah.
we learned in our research that there were apparently two I-5 killers.
There's one called the I-5. Oh,
Whoa,
sorry,
that's
my phone
okay.
crashed. Oh my God, he's like right there in
Oh
my
my
window.
gosh. What is that, lawnmower or
Sorry,
something?
guys.
No, that's okay.
Sorry.
No, it's
That's
all right.
ridiculous.
So there is
He, anyway, they had a, you know, they linked DNA to her, right? He got the name the I-5 killer, right? The other one was the I-5 strangler.
Okay.
So
So he
I
had
think that's where things got, you know, kind of mixed up or misconstrued, you know, on, well, when I was reading up on it, and they were like, there were bodies everywhere when it
Right.
still didn't throw bodies on the interstate, right? Would go up and down the interstate, and he would rob, you know, stores. And if there were women there, he would attack them and sexually assault them, rob them, things of that, you know, nature, of course. And be like, oh, we'll take all your water, get
Yeah.
some snacks,
Yes.
you know. But he did, his victims, I'll tell you about his victims. He never confessed to any of the murders that he was accused of, though there's DNA, like I said, that connected him to Hall. And
Okay.
the other girl survived, so she was like, yep, that's him, you know. So in 1980, October 9th, is when he killed Sherry Lynn Ayers, who was 22. That was his classmate, right? He bludgeoned and stabbed her and raped her. November 27th of 1980, Darcy Renee Fix, 22, and Douglas Keith Aldig, 24, were both found shot to death with a 22 revolver in their Portland home on Thanksgiving Day.
Wow.
That's,
Yeah, that
and the thing is it never says that he raped her or stole anything from the house, nothing. It's like he just went in and did it, you know? And then December 21st, there's an unnamed woman because she, I guess, didn't want to be named. She actually survived. He assaulted her at gunpoint in a Seattle restroom and forced her to masturbate for him. Yeah, talk about an orgasm.
Yeah, you know, that's good. I am drinking water for this show, and I kind of wish I was drinking whiskey. This is heavy stuff, you know.
I was thinking I have some wine in there, but it's like what, noon?
It's not even noon here, so I'm just like, I
Maybe
really
put
should.
it on there as one.
Yeah, there you go.
So in there's about to be a murder outside my house with
Oh
a week.
gosh.
I'm gonna go out there and get that dude. Oh my Lord, I can't believe it.
Let it be stated for the record that Rita is joking. She's not really gonna
Oh
murder
yeah, I'm joking. He will probably
landscaper.
kill out of
So
the
if
one
her
that she
landscaper
did.
does disappear under mysterious
Yeah.
circumstances, it wasn't
Well, look, it
Rita.
all of a sudden got quiet. He must have seen me looking out the window going,
Yep.
giving the eye. So in 1983, Susie Bennett, she's 20. She was a market clerk in Oregon, and she was shot by Woodfield during a robbery, and she survived also. And this sounds terrible, but man, he's not much of a killer, is he?
No, it seems like he's, well, not in every scenario, but in a lot of them, it kind of seems like a robbery gone bad, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, you know, he's trying to.
You.
Mm-mm.
No,
I haven't watched it.
Well, don't, because I hate this show. But the book is one of my all-time favorite books by Carol.
Yeah, I've heard the book's great, yeah.
Oh, my God, and the audio book's even better.
I was talking over you for a second. Who did you say the author was?
Carolyn Kepnes.
Okay, cool. All right, I just wanted to make sure the listeners got that.
Yeah. But Joe, he's a serial killer, and he'll like try to kill somebody, and then they don't die, and then he has to go back and try and kill them again. So it's like every time he has to try to kill them twice.
Oh.
And I'm like, you're a terrible serial killer. You're one of my all-time favorite characters, but you suck at killing.
Yeah, really bad at your job.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's something else.
Can't be fired from that.
So then January 18th, 1981, was the Sherry Lynn Hall and the Beth Wilmot employees, right, that we talked about, February 3rd of 1981, unnamed woman, is 18, he kidnapped her at gunpoint and raped her near Redding, California, in the morning hours, and she survived. February 3rd, again, I guess the same day.
Oh, wow.
He's going Ted Bundy here.
Yeah.
Right?
Towards the end, right? Yeah.
Yes, he did. Was Donna Lee Edgar, 37, and her daughter Janelle Jarvis, 14, both found sexually assaulted and shot to death in their Shasta County home. Jarvis, the 14-year-old, was determined to have been sodomized after death.
Oh, yuck.
Escalate much? I mean, in one day, escalated
to
death.
Yeah, it's just like...
You have this one that he shot and survived, and then all of a sudden, it escalated to that?
Yeah. Like, what do you think was going on, like, in his head, you know?
I don't know. I don't know if he wasn't satisfied with what he had done with that one and was like still had that adrenaline pump, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, it really.
And it could have been also, it's a young girl.
Yeah.
You know? And it did say that.
Hello, landscaper.
Hey, how many times do you have to cut that 10-foot of grass?
I know, right?
Good God. But, you know, just like I said with Bundy, it was just like, it wasn't enough. It just, well, I'm going to find someone else, and it's going to get, it just go. And it did say, you know, he did, you know, eventually move to that, like, torture, and, you know, to me, that's torture, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
The next day. February 4th. Unnamed woman kidnapped and raped in California. She also survived.
Damn.
So it's just like he has these like, these just like moments of like just adrenaline, like urgency, and you can't
it definitely seems like there's a, I see why you kind of hesitated when I asked you, like, if he had any methods, because it's like, or what his method was, you know, if he had one, but it seems like he's kind of all over the place.
He is, he's very all over the place, and they even mentioned that he's all over the place.
Yeah.
He it's like a spur of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll just try this out.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Wow.
You know? What interests me, though, is how many he left.
Right,
You know?
right. I mean, it sounded, I mean, I wasn't, keeping count, but it sounded like, the ratio
There's
was,
a lot more survivors than not.
yeah,
Yeah.
which, yeah, wow.
And then February 15th. I mean, these are like, see how close these are to get, no? I mean, February 3rd, he did it three different people, four different people he attacked.
Yeah.
And then February 4th, attacked the girl. And then the 15th, I mean, it's just, but it was Julianne Ritz, who was 18. She was raped and shot to death in her Oregon home around 4 a.m. She was an acquaintance of his through his job as a bouncer. So she actually knew him, which is wow. So it doesn't say like, it just says bouncer. It doesn't say like, what bar, whatever. It just says, he's a bouncer. But there are other possible victims, right? So if they, it says if they retrace his movements along the interstate, five, there are at least 25 other potential murders, right? Some suggest up to 44. Some of them are Martha Morrison, who's 17, who disappeared in Oregon in September of 74, was found murdered the following month in Vancouver, Washington. Her remains were unidentified until 2015. And it says both Woodfield and Bundy had been considered suspects in this murder.
Yeah, sounds about right. You know, time frame
Yeah.
wise.
So we'd mentioned Bundy earlier, that
Yeah.
how he would kind of, do the same kind of MO sometimes,
Yeah, yeah.
and
But
not.
we don't need to talk about him. He has like seven TV shows. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I'm just kind of
I'm
saying,
just kidding. I'm just kidding.
yeah, I know, honey, I know. Yeah, I'm kind of sick of Bundy. I am. I'm kind of. I'm not sick of him, but I'm sick of like hearing about it and the whole
It's just the go-to, right? Like, it's everybody's go-to.
you're commercialized guys.
Yeah.
You're commercialized serial killers. And your Dahmers and your Gacys and
Sure, sure.
I
Yeah,
like your obscure.
you're like a hipster serial killer enthusiast, you know?
Do not call me a hipster, young man. I'm just kidding. I do not have a beard.
That's true.
And then during the spring of 1980, Marsha Weider, 19, and Kathy Allen, 18, vanished while hitchhiking from Spokane, Washington, where they're from, Alaska. Their bodies were found in May of 1981. Suspected serial killer Martin Lee Sanders was later connected to their murders. But as of 2018, it remains unsolved. Don't know who did that, did those. So his convictions, what it came down to, he was only convicted for Hall, the Sharon Hall,
Right.
right? He got the 90 years. He got life in prison. It was 90 years plus 165 years. So I just tacked on 165
Yeah,
years.
just in case.
Right. But he was, his convictions came down to murder, attempted murder, second degree murder, robbery, sodomy, and sexual assault.
Jeez.
As of 2012, he has been linked to five more murders. He is now in a Portland institute, penitentiary. Yeah, well, for the rest of his freaking life,
Jeez. Yeah. Good riddance, right?
Oh man, yeah. So I wanted to get to this where he's in jail and the cops are like, wait, what?
Yes.
So stuff is still going on. What the hell was, you know, going on?
Right.
So, let's see. Where did I put that? Okay. So, it says that, like, while he was in prison, right, the cops discovered that there were two serial killers working separately, stalking with women along the interstate through the decade, for a whole decade. And one is, of course, the I-5 killer, one's the I-5 strangler.
And what was his full name, the strangler?
Oh, Richard Kimby.
Okay.
Let's see. There's Randall Brent Woodfield. Oh, Roger Reese Kimby.
Okay. All
right. Right. Kimby was born in 49. Randall was born in 50.
Relatively right? The same age, almost.
Yeah. And, which is really, wow.
Yeah.
And like I said, one came from a good home, one came up from a, you know, a bad home.
I don't think you talked about that. I think you talked about that while before we were recording. So we should talk about, you know, Kimmy's home a little bit.
Okay. So Randall came from a very good background.
Right.
He had, you know, his two sisters. He was, like, middle class. His dad was a manager at the phone company. His mom was, you know, stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. He exhibited, you know, no, I guess, abnormal actions during his childhood. It all started happening when he was a teen.
Yeah.
And, you know, exposing himself and then eventually, you know, when he went to high school, it got even worse.
Right.
And he started doing that, you know. And it, like I said, they had the coaches covered it all up, got his arrest stuff expunged. So whenever he was put into the NFL was like, we never brought him in, right? In comparison to, like, Roger Kimby, who was the I-5 strangler, he was a loner, he was a stutterer, he was beaten, bullied at school, his mother beat him, hated him, abandoned him, and then, you know, of course, he went on his rampage, you know, I think that was just pure anger.
And it's you know, that's interesting to me, like, how different their upbringings were, you know, I mean, because, like, it really says that, you know, it's, I mean, we're, all, you know, I guess it says that we're all different, you know, it's like, I mean,
my thing is they say that, like, that Woodfield started his killing after he was kicked off the football team, that he'd lost.
Right. But he was doing weird shit way before that.
Yeah. And then this guy, Kimby, it was just, I think, just out of just anger, just lashing out at people for, you know, being mistreated and, you know, that type of thing. So they, you know, they theorize that it was him being, you know, kicked off the team and stuff. So I'm like, well, don't flap your dick everywhere and you won't get kicked off.
Seriously.
Because apparently, you know, even the coaches said he was an amazing football player, that he would have been fantastic wide receiver, that he was great, but
threw it all away.
Couldn't keep his stuff in check.
No.
Kimby, though, he started, they found all but one of his victims on the freeway around Sacramento, California. And he was eventually, in 1991, sentenced to 25 years of life in prison for the murder of Darcy fracking pole.
Oh, that is
If I said
wow.
that right, I'm
Yeah.
sorry.
No.
He was just, it came off really as kind of normal because he was like the furniture salesman guy, you
Yeah.
know, just,
I don't know. I've been in some creepy ass furniture stores. I gotta be.
he would kidnap his victims, tie them up, duct tape them, and then cut open their clothes in irregular shapes with scissors that had belonged to his mother. And that sounds very Norman Bates.
Yeah.
And then he'd rape and strangle them to death. And he would also cut off parts of their hair to keep. He had made up, when he got arrested, he made, you know, a plea to avoid the death penalty, to tell them, you know, where some of the bodies were, right? So his victims were, in September of 77, was Lou Ellen Berlin, 21, 1986, Laura Hedick, 20, 1986. This is like April was Laura, and then July of 86 was Barbara Ann Scott, 29. July 15th of 86 was Stephanie Brown. August 17th of 86 was Charmaine Sabra. November 5th of 1986 was Catherine Quinone. June 21st of 87, Karen Finch. And September 17th of 87 was Darcy Fragenpohl. So, one of the ones that really, I'm just like, oh my gosh, was Charmaine Sabra and her mom were hitchhiking. And he pulled up, and the mom was like, no, you go ahead, you know. And she'd already, like, I guess, you know, called somebody and said, oh, I'm waiting, and you know, go ahead.
Yeah.
Never seen her again until they found her body. God, I could not imagine being that mother. You know, just, so it says the two serial killers working separately on the I-5. Together, they are responsible for more than a dozen confirmed killings, but investigators believe that the actual number could be at least four times as high.
Yeah.
And
You know, it's interesting. I made the joke about, being a bad, him being bad, the original guy being bad at his job. But it's interesting how I guess the proper language is, they say they were working, is that like directly from the official literature, I guess? Like, it's
mean
interesting that
like jobs and stuff?
they describe it in that term. It said there are two serial killers working the I-5.
Oh no, working as in like just stalking
Oh
them.
no, I know that, but I mean, it's interesting that they're describing the killing as working, like it is their job,
Oh yeah, like it is their job. Yeah, well,
Yeah.
you know, I. I wouldn't be surprised
Yeah,
if that's
yeah.
how I've seen it. You know? And, well, you know, you can look at BTK. That fucking freak. God, that guy's
Yeah.
an idiot. I'm sorry, that guy's an idiot. He's an idiot. It's just the way he speaks, and he calls his, like, his victims his projects. And then whenever they go, you know, he's like, I trolled them. And then he has to explain what trolling is. And I'm like, what? It's like he tries to sound like so, you know,
Yeah, I
cool
was
and
gonna
perfect.
say, what a pretentious jerk.
Yeah. And then there's like the one survivor, and even he says that he was very gentle with them when he would like tie the knots up on them, or
Dear.
like one woman like sit and smoke a cigarette and talk to him before he killed her, and just like, what? That guy's a jackass. I think anyway, I'm just, oh God, I don't know. So victims along the Northern California interstate. He preyed on sex workers and women waiting for roadside assistance, which was Charmaine. In addition to raping and asphyxiating his victims, he was known for methodically cutting away their clothing in a bizarre fetish. He was arrested as a teenager for petty theft and prowling after he's observed stealing women's bathing suits and stockings. There's a book written about him called The Hunt for the Elusive Serial Killer by Bruce Henderson, who said he enjoyed tying himself up with women's underwear and cutting the garments he stole with pairs of scissors. And that, to me, is like BTK, because that's the kind of shit. And took pictures of himself. But get this. As an adult, Kimmy made and sold furniture and spent his free time hiking and skydiving.
Interesting.
Put that on your Plenty of Fish profile.
Yeah, really.
he eventually settled down in Northern California, and he married a woman named Harriet, right? Mm-hmm. Who was like his mother. Was very domineering. He ended up killing her, and get this, his brother was a police detective. He dumped her body outside of his house.
Oh, fuck.
Right?
That's something.
That is brass balls.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah.
And it says that he would, like, sit and pick his brother's brain for police procedures to get forensic evidence so he would know what to do and what not to do. Mm. So he wasn't, I mean, he did some dumb shit, but that's very Kemper. Remember, Kemper did that. He would talk cops and stuff.
Yep.
And then in 1977, he placed a bogus job posting as a business trade school in San Francisco, and lured in a 21-year-old Lou Ellen Burleigh, who took the bait, and took her out in the middle of nowhere in Napa County, raped and strangled her, and then dumped her body in nearby a riverbed. Her remains were not found for 30 years.
Damn.
And then it said it was almost a decade before he killed again. His next known victim was Laura Hedick, 21, who sometimes was a sex worker. He took her, you know, raped her, strangled her, and her remains were found on the Interstate 5 near Sacramento. She was strangled with her own tank top. And then it says his thirst for sexual violence and bloodshed only increased. He would strike twice in July of that year. On the third, he abducted 29-year-old Barbara Ann Scott before killing her and dumping her. Also, he dumped her close to where his brother lived. What?
Yeah, really.
Eventually, he was pulled over by the cops because someone had seen him take her and put her in the car and call the cops and gave him a description. And inside, they found the murder kit, you know, everything. So, of course, he's being prosecuted for, you know, all of this. And DNA technology eventually advanced to the point that he was implicated in several murders. Actually on 6 counts and made him eligible for the death penalty. September 29th, 2009, 30 or so years after he started his spree, he pled guilty to the rape and murder of, you know, all of his victims.
So he confessed to everything?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
And he got 6 consecutive life sentences. Let's see where he is. What prison is he in? Sorry. Alex Cruz to Interstate 5 looking for women to brutalize, and he is now 79 years old.
Jesus. This, yeah. Folks, I'm going to apologize. I did not talk very much during this episode because serial killers are a tough topic for me, believe it or not, and I now have a huge renewed respect for true crime podcasters. I don't know how you do this shit every week.
Well, is there something you want to add or ask me?
How did you get into this kind of stuff? I remember, like, I took a psychology course in high school, and they had a whole section dedicated to serial killers, and I was like, you know, I did a lot of reading, you know, in the year or two following that, and I don't know, I guess, like, as you know, I got older and certain things happened in my life. Like, I worked as a 911 operator for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, like, even though I write the shit I do, like real life violence and stuff really gets under my skin.
Yeah, it's different. I was telling someone the other day about how you said that there was like a scene in your book that you never went back and reread.
It's chapter 12 of Gods of the Dark Web. I don't know if you're there yet.
Yeah, no, apparently not. But I'm like, you know, it's their job. It's what they write. It doesn't, you know, and they can't always stomach it either, you know? Yeah. And I've even, like, heard where, like, directors and producers and writers are like that. They're like, this scared the hell out of me when we filmed it, you know?
I had listened to last podcast on the left a few years ago. For two reasons. My friend Jeff Burke, who's a publisher, mm-hmm. recommended it to me, and I also was interested because they did an episode on Chris Benoit. And guys, yeah. I'm a huge wrestling fan, so he was one of my favorites growing up. And so, you know, I wanted to know a little more about that. And I listened to the episode, and I was just like, what is wrong with these guys, right? Like, I called my friend Jeff. I was like, these guys are kind of annoying, and like, sorry, guys.
Oh, yeah, the podcast guys?
I asked, you know, my friend about it, and he's like, look, it's just the way they deal with the shit they're, you know, is they make dumb jokes because, like, they're talking about awful shit, you know, and I guess that's right. How they cope, you know, but it was too much for me.
You need to check out, like, Morbid.
Yeah.
And I'll send you a link to some of their stuff, especially the Kevin murders, where she's like, hoo ha!
Just
her responses are great. They don't disrespect, but I mean, you know, it's just it's kind of a way of, you know, dealing and not getting overwhelmed and over emotional and, you know, things. But can I tell you something interesting about the Benoit thing? There is a conspiracy that
Kevin Sullivan did it.
No, well, I don't know about that. But there's a conspiracy where it was posted on Wikipedia about their deaths 2 hours before the bodies were found.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's crazy. And, of course, what's his name?
Vince McMahon. Yeah.
Yeah, like, no. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's
got a screenshot of it, right? Yeah.
It's there.
It's so weird.
One says that he shot himself, and the other one says he hung himself.
Yeah, I think hanging himself is the consensus, you know, like he did it on his weightlifting machine. But
yeah,
I have heard the shooting one before. I know they just did an episode of it they did a Viceland documentary. They've been doing this, mm-hmm. like, series, which I think, you know, even though you're not a wrestling fan, you might be interested in. It's all about
the
yeah, yeah, and any of our
in the 80s. Oh, I was on Road Warriors, Rock and Roll Express, Ric Flair. Woo!
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Brothers, you name it. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The NWA stuff, Jim Crockett Promotions. Good times. But this series, it's just a series of documentaries about, like, the dark side of wrestling and all these tragedies behind the scenes.
Right.
The one on Benoit is pretty heavy. They had to do 2 episodes on it.
Wow.
You know, so, yeah.
I'd seen on Instagram someone had posted it, and someone had said, I'm from this town, and he shot himself. And then I posted under, and I was like, wait, no, he hung himself. So there was like two different things going on from there. So I, like I said, I think it was, you know, also he had hung himself.
Yeah, I mean, do you have anything you want to add about these two charming fellows, or
or how I got started into this?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it also goes back to, like I said, I used the horror to deal. Well, oh my gosh, this is back 2012, right after I got out of college, and I started working at a lab and would listen to, you know, podcasts. And I'd originally started listening to this podcast called Entitled Opinions, and it's out of Stanford University, which is brilliant. It's, you know, they have like every, you know, scholars in their field, everything from philosophy to music to writers, you name it. And so I just kind of kept going. And then I found this one called True Murder. And I honestly think it is the first true crime podcast.
Really?
Yeah. The guy's name that does it is Dan Zabansky. And he's on my Facebook page. I will link you to him.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But he's like been around for years. And so he was like the first one that I listened to. And I just was like, boom. And I was like, oh, God, this is wow. And he talks to like authors of the books, or, you know, people that interview, you know, serial killers and stuff. Brilliant. And then it just kind of went from there. And then I just got completely addicted.
Yeah. It is weird, you know, that it is kind of a weird synchronicity, right? That the two were kind of doing that on the highway at the same time, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's like, but you know, there's also the Highway of Tears. Have you ever heard of it?
I'm not familiar.
Okay. There's a Highway of Tears where there have been like more murders than they can count, and they don't even know how many serial killers had been killed that. And of course, some of them had to have been at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like a future episode right there, honestly.
Yeah, well, the Galveston killing fields. Okay. You're in Texas. Have you heard of it?
I have not.
Galveston killing fields is like that too, where it's dumping grounds.
Yeah.
So you know, there could be, you know, multiple ones. You know, and you know, you have a guy, I can't remember his name, that ended up being a serial killer that actually worked for John Wayne Gacy's construction company.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, you just never know, like, they know, you know?
Yeah.
You just don't know.
You never really know anybody, I guess.
Yeah. I really know you, Lucas.
But do I really know you, Rita?
I'm pretty innocent. If I was not, I just told you about the kid outside.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. you said it on a recording too. I mean, that's pretty.
Yeah, and I'm like, that dude's got a weed eater, and I know how to use one.
That's great. All right, so do you want to do some author shout outs here?
Oh, I do, and I actually mentioned this guy on the last one, because remember I had mentioned Jay Conrath and Luther Kite series, which is my all-time favorite. And the only other ones I could find that were even remotely close to that was Jeff Menapace and his series of books called Bad Games. So those are the ones that I want to talk about because amazing.
Cool. I know the name, but I can't say I've read him. You know, I've definitely heard the name. We might even be Facebook friends, but I don't think I've read
him. Oh, he is amazing. Do you have a Kindle?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sending them to you then.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Because there's
same email address that you sent the notes to is where you can loan me stuff on Kindle.
Okay. And then the fifth one just came out not long ago, and I actually have gotten to do, like, the animations on all the covers of his books. And when I was talking about wanting to do T-shirts with the book covers, he was the first one that, like, first ones that I got a hold of and was like, oh my god, and he's like,
oh, that's great. Oh, that's
and we'll do yours too.
Yeah, definitely. I need to check with I want to do the next book I have coming out, just because I guess it'll be more immediate, you know, but I want to make sure the cover's actually ready. I don't know if I don't have the final version yet.
We can still do, you still have two other ones you can do too. I mean, it's still,
that's
it's
true.
Advertisement.
Yeah, that's true.
I even can
that's
do
true.
Book bags.
Okay, cool.
Like,
I like that.
I have my my Blake Crouch, you know, book bag that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I posted that, you know, doing that online, you know, 99% of the authors, you know, were like, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
And then some of them were like, copyright, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but you own it. You bought that picture. It's yours now,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
And so I put on there about, you know, how I done the whole, you know, the book covers for the Conrath and Crouch, and posted it on their page, and they flipped out. They were like, those are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
As long as I'm not, like, selling it,
right,
you know, like, I mean, if it's yours, and I can sell it to you, right?
Right.
I can't go out to like a store and start selling them.
Sure.
And it's mine, right?
Yeah.
It's yours. So unless you gave me, you know, permission to do it,
okay.
You know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, so Jeff, he is so awesome. I love his name's Jeff Menefee. He's fantastic.
Okay.
Have to look him up. He is from Philadelphia. He has won the Red Adept Review Indie Award for horror. He has the Bad Game series, which to me is absolutely one of the best book series ever. And there's five in all. And it's about this family. It's called the Lambert family. It starts out the very first book. And they go to this cabin, of course, in the middle of fucking nowhere. And on the way, they stop at this gas station. And this guy starts talking to the father. And he's like, oh, you know, where are you guys going? And he's like, oh, we're going to this cabin. And the guy goes, oh, us too. We have a cabin there. They're the Finelli brothers. Right, they're both. But it turns out they're fucking batshit crazy and psycho.
Yeah.
And so while this family, the Lamberts, are there to go have summer fun, these guys are going for stalking, kidnapping, raping, and murder.
Jeez.
Also, though, I want to note that there's kids in the book, but he absolutely does not mess with the kids. That's one of his things. He will tell you that in his books, that that the kids are never harmed or bothered in the book. That's just not his thing. So if anybody reads it and has a trigger for that's not in there. He doesn't do that. And animal abuse, he doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's one of my triggers.
Yeah, same.
And he has some other books called Wildlife. There's a first one, and then there's Wildlife. There's a sequel to that. And then he has one called Dark Halls, which is more of a supernatural type. And then he has one called Side Effects, which is also about serial killer. And I would like to read, like...
All right. Yeah, let's hear it.
Oh, my gosh. It's short, but it's from the first book. His ass with it,
nice.
And it knocks him down, and then get this shit. She grabs a jewelry box and gets out a fingernail file and stabs him in the balls.
Nice.
And I don't mean like stab, I mean like
yeah.
And his brother like hears him screaming and comes upstairs and is like, what the fuck? And it's just, he has no balls now.
Oh,
and I was just like, that is so epic to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's great.
With that he's like, give me oral sex, and she's like, really?
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to go ahead and file your balls down for you.
Yeah.
You know? To me, I loved
That sounds awesome. Now I want to check that one out now. For
that
sure.
tune. It was really unexpected. I mean, you think, oh, she could fight him off or, knock him out, but a fingernail fell to balls. Come on. And fingernail files on the end, like if you have the metal ones and they have the hook. Oh man. So yeah, if you you can find him on Amazon. Find him on, he's on Instagram, he's on Facebook. Find him, get his books. He is absolutely amazing. That series, you can actually get it in a box set.
Oh, cool.
And I mean, for on Kindle.
I don't know. I kind of feel like he's his own genre. He really, like,
Oh, that's great.
I can't imagine anybody few cries sprinkled throughout. Like, it is just a heavy book. Great
And I'll ask
stories.
them exactly what's that mean? Absolutely worth the time. That it's amazing. And I, yay, Jeff, shout out.
Awesome. So I guess my author shout out is going to be, I mean, I guess if anyone out there, follows me on Instagram, you probably know I've been talking a lot about Charles Austin Muir. He is a short story author mostly, and his newest collection is called Slippery When Metastasized, and it is, he is
Wow,
a,
what?
yeah, it is a hell of a title. It's a hell of a book. I'm telling you, there's like a laugh on every page, and then like a few cries sprinkled throughout. Like it is just a heavy book. Great
Ask
stories.
them exactly what's that mean?
Yeah,
Slipping past the top.
it's a play on words. I mean, I guess so. He wrote it in the wake of finding out that his wife had cancer,
Well,
and
that's what I was gonna ask. It's like, yeah.
and so, so I guess it's kind of like a play on that, in a way. And yeah, the book deals with a lot of that stuff, and it's heavy, but it's also really funny. I don't know what genre to really call Charles. Like, he's got a little bit of horror, a little bit of bizarro, but I don't know. I kind of feel like he's his own genre. He really, like,
Well, that's great.
I can't imagine anybody else writing those stories. Like, they're very original. They're just, and a ton of fun to read.
Maybe like that was kind of like his way of like him and his wife dealing with the situation, and being like, oh, well, we can make fun of it, but serious, but at the same time, make fun of it. And that's honestly really a good way to do
I
that.
agree. Yeah, I agree.
That's really brilliant. And it's very rare to be able to go, I don't even know what genre to put him in because he is that good or, eccentric or, whatever it may be.
Well, he's both, it's very original and very good,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. So, I mean, I guess that's all I got, for today. Do you have any final thoughts before we sign off here?
No, but I'm really looking forward to doing the Ramirez.
Yes, I'm excited about that too. I also had a friend who was pen pals with Ramirez, but I don't talk to her anymore, so I wouldn't be able to get anything from her. But I'll talk a little bit about that, when we,
Oh,
yeah.
and the app. Oh, the app.